Back on?
Yes.
Thank you. All right, Commissioner Fedorchuk, did you have further questions?
Actually, after all that, I don't, Steve.
So. Well, you did have them. You just got them answered elsewhere. All right, yes. Thank you. Commissioner Kalk, any follow-up?
For the record, kind of comment. Thank you for your testimony. Do you think we can do something different so we don't find ourselves in the same situation 5 years from now?
Yes, sir. I think moving forward, we're going to bring all these projects to you on a prospective basis. Our latest set of wind contracts, they have their stipulation in the contract is that we need North Dakota Commission approval before those contracts are final. I think we'll have a good process, good working relationship moving forward.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Christman.
I have no more questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further questions for this witness?
No, Your Honor.
No, Your Honor.
No.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Wishart. You're excused. All right. And now we're back to Mr. Johnson, who's going to call the next witness.
Yes, Your Honor, but before I do call the next witness, I would like to make a comment or just describe something for the commission.
Go ahead.
Earlier today, questions arose with respect to that where the request was that we have someone from the company who could address them, and these are the questions that Commissioner Fedorchuk had. I indicated I wasn't sure I would be able to provide such a witness. I am able to provide such a witness, but it would be by telephone connection. The witness would be George Tyson, who is our treasurer and vice president. He is available this afternoon and I believe tomorrow morning, but we would need to get a time so that we didn't call and he not be there or vice versa. I have spoken to both Mr. Norrell and Ms.
Jeff Kotsackle.
I'm losing a little of my edge here, and they're aware of this. So I offer that up, not by way of delaying Ms. Hoyer's appearance, just so that we can work that into our planning as appropriate.
Did you come up with a recommended time?
We're open to that. No,
okay.
Mr. Tyson just said he was available. I know that advocacy staff has two people, I believe, that have to get on and off today. Somehow the scheduling has to be accommodated. That's what we're trying to accommodate.
Okay. Mr. Norrell, do you have any suggestion?
No, Your Honor. I did speak with our witnesses, or one of the witnesses who does have travel arrangements that would be infringing upon his testimony tonight. He made the statement, and I tend to agree. At some point, you gotta, you know, fish or cut bait. And essentially, if he's not done with testimony by 4 o'clock, we've got three witnesses left, and potentially a fourth if the commission would entertain that, and we have no objection to. Realistically, I don't know that we'll be able to get through this witness by 4 o'clock this afternoon. So that
Mr.
all
Tyson, you mean?
Our particular witness, the advocacy staff witness. So that having been said, we're open to whatever time would be amenable to the company.
You said he's available in the morning?
I believe that's correct. Again, we can have someone go and verify that, but that was the impression I formed. I know he's available all afternoon.
You know, my suggestion would be if we could put him on first thing in the morning. What does that sound like, commissioners? Then we have a time certain, even if it's out of order.
That would be advocacy staff's objection to that, would be potentially breaking up our case. But
Your Honor, I would be thinking 4:30. Just pick a time today, and we let the company keep rolling, and at 4:20, we take a quick break, and they dial them up, and we get he or she on at 4:30, and when they're done, we take our normal break, and we come back at night. That gives us 2.5 hours for them to do what they have to do. It gives plenty of maybe jockey the witnesses a little bit. But I think that finishing the company's case before we roll on would be
I think probably your advocacy witness, you know, it looks doubtful you may get them on today. So they may need to make other arrangements. But all right, if you can send someone out, Mr. Johnson, and we'll say we'll dial him up at 4:30, and I guess Mr. Sheldon will make the arrangements, okay?
Thank you, Your Honor. We will do that.
Thank you. All right, with that in mind, let's proceed. And is the next witness Ms. Is it Hoyer? Is that how you pronounce the name?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, thank you. Ann Hoyer? Now, Ms. Hoyer, you've been here and heard me instruct as to penalties for perjury, have you not?
Yes, I have.
All right. Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth under the pains and penalties of perjury? If so, answer, I do.
I do.
Thank you. All right. And I believe Ms. Paulson is handing out a witness statement for you, which is probably marked 31. Thank you. All right. And by stipulation, that is agreed to and admitted into the record as NSP 31. Mr. Johnson, proceed, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon, Ms. Hoyer. You've got in front of you NSP Exhibits 18 and 19, which are your direct and rebuttal testimony. I don't know of any corrections that need to be made to that, but wondered if there were any.
No, they're not.
You have prepared a summary of your testimony for the commission this afternoon?
Yes, I have.
Please proceed.
I am the manager of revenue analysis for Xcel Energy Services, Inc. My primary role in this proceeding is to provide the company's financial data in support of its request for a general rate increase. Our request for an increase has decreased from $16.9 million to $14.9 million. The decrease reflects the company's request for a lower return on equity of 10.25% and adjustments to individual expenses and revenues. Those adjustments, other than the ROE, have been agreed to by advocacy staff consultants. The remaining proposed adjustments by the staff consultants and the ROE remain contested. Many of the staff consultants' adjustments are addressed by other company witnesses and are then reflected by me in the overall revenue requirement calculation. Some of the staff consultants' adjustments are addressed directly by me. Of those, I will provide comments on four contested adjustments in this opening statement. Average three-year historical operating expenses. I testified against Mr. Dante Mugrasse's proposal to replace all of the 2013 operating expenses with a historical three-year average of 2010, 2011, and 2012 expense. That proposal is inconsistent with fundamental rate making in several respects. Although the company is allowed under North Dakota statute to use a 2013 projected test year, Mr. Mugrasse eliminates any consideration of 2013 operating expenses. He provided no testimony challenging the accuracy of our projected 2013 expenses. Instead, Mr. Mugrasse uses a three-year historical average of operating expenses, which is inconsistent with his use of a 2013 sales forecast. Further, his approach is also inconsistent with the rate-making standard that develops the test year using 12 consecutive months of revenues and expenses. In addition, his recommended three-year average expense is lower than the operating expenses approved for the 2011 test year used to set rates in our last rate case, and the company's earnings in 2011 were well below authorized levels. Demand allocator. Mr. Scott Brockett explained why a 1CP is an inappropriate demand allocator. I testify about the additional problems with the manner in which Dr. Carl Pavlovic calculated the 1CP demand allocator and the application of the 1CP allocator by Mr. Mugras. I list five additional errors by Dr. in Dr. Pavlovic's and Mr. Mugras's analysis, which each of which is contrary to fundamental rate making. The two most significant errors are Dr. Pavlovic used 2010, 2011, and 2012 data to calculate the 1CP allocator. Consequently, he does not capture the changes in relative demand for North Dakota occurring in 2013. In contrast, Dr. Pavlovic accepted the use of 2013 data for the calculation of each of the other jurisdictional allocators, which is an additional inconsistency. Mr. Mugras applied the 1CP allocator to some expenses and not others, and applied the 1CP allocator to the general expense category while accepting the full value of the adjustments made by the company. This creates yet another mismatch and inconsistency. Expense amortization. The company proposes to amortize several test year expenses over 3 years. However, Mr. Mugras reduces the revenue requirement by one-third based on his assumption that we will recover one-third of the expense through interim rates. This is inconsistent with fundamental rate making, which uses the final revenue requirement for the test year to calculate whether to make an interim rate refund. Under Mr. Mugras's proposal, one-third of the revenues collected under interim rates would be refunded, and final rates would not recover the unrecovered costs. The net result is that we would only recover two-thirds of these legitimate expenses. Net plant in service. The last item I wish to address is the calculation of net plant in service. For a 2013 test year, rate-making fundamentals require the use of the end-of-year 2012 net plant balances as the starting point. Contrary to this principle, Mr. Mugras uses as his starting point the average 2012 net plant balances. In addition, Mr. Mugras uses a number of inconsistent approaches to arrive at his recommended 2013 net plant. In conclusion, based on consistent application of fundamental rate-making principles, the company has appropriately determined the 2013 test year revenues, expenses, and rate base necessary to provide service to customers in North Dakota. I also would like to say that I do have some information available that was requested yesterday for two items. The first was the pension smoothing proposal that we had made. I have an information request response that calculates the reduction to the North Dakota revenue requirements that that proposal would apply. And then also I have for the charitable contributions, I believe you were looking for some historical information about the charitable contributions that were assigned to the North Dakota jurisdiction. And I know you asked for 20 years, and overnight we were able to gather the contributions from 2006 to 2013. And then also for 2012, I have a schedule that outlines exactly which charity organizations make up the amount for 2012, and then the amounts that were assigned to North Dakota Electric of those. So if you'd like that information, I can provide.
Does that chart also include contributions for economic development?
No, it's just that would just be the that's just the contributions for.
I believe that would be what was requested as part of late filed Exhibit C.
Yes, Your Honor, we were simply trying to make available as much information as we could get on an overnight basis.
So that would be part of it, but the
Correct.
Late filed exhibit would still include the other part of that, which would be the economic development contributions. And okay. So, you know, do you have copies of that for the commission?
We can certainly make them. We okay. just wanted to indicate that
it's available.
That it is available, right. And if people want to do a current inquiry on it, Ms. Hoyer can respond.
Very good. All right, at this time then, Mr. Johnson.
Ms. Hoyer is available for cross-examination.
Thank you. Mr. Norrell.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ms. Hoyer, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I would like to draw your attention to page 11 of your rebuttal testimony. Lines 6 and 7. You discuss the loss of the company's two largest customers. Why would the loss of these two large customers in Minnesota have an effect on operations in North Dakota?
What the effect is it affects the percent of North Dakota as it relates to the total NSP Minnesota company costs. So it affects the percent of the total.
Your Honor, may I please approach the stand, the witness with the proposed exhibit?
You may.
Your Honor, this is a response received by advocacy staff in response to a data request NDPSC 5-04-014, and we would move that this be admitted as Exhibit 14, PSC 14.
Any objections, Mr. Johnson?
No objections, Your Honor.
Thank you. PSC Exhibit 14 is admitted.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ms. Hoyer, could you please read the what the question is from PSC staff?
Witness Ann E. Hoyer, Revenue Requirements Exhibit AEH1. Provide monthly balances beginning in January 2013 of NSP NDO. Balance sheets and income statements continue to update throughout the rate proceeding.
Could you please read the response, the first paragraph?
The company respectfully objects to this request as unduly burdensome, as the company does not prepare monthly balance sheets and income statements for individual jurisdictions such as North Dakota. Preparation of such information on a monthly basis is unduly burdensome.
So is it accurate to say the company cannot provide a snapshot at a point in time of the company's financial data as it relates to North Dakota?
Every month?
Yeah.
We do not have that information.
Is the most recent historical or actual financial data that you have on the company's operations in North Dakota from year end 2012?
That is correct.
Has the company submitted or updated any financial data for 2013? Do you have anything on hand as regards to your operations in North Dakota?
We do not have a complete 2013 forecast for North Dakota.
You won't have that until after the year is done. Is that correct?
We won't have that until after we process the budget for 2014, and then as a part of that process, we update our forecast for 2013.
Could you go to page 15 of your rebuttal testimony?
Page 13.
This is discussing the net plant and service, your answer between 10 and 14. Do you have a...
Which page was that?
I'm sorry, page 15.
Okay.
State that the average balance you used... Just a second here. I may be misreading. My notes aren't comporting to the actual testimony. I apologize. I had a question about it, but now that I reread it, it's been clarified. So thank you. I apologize.
It's nice to be able to clarify your own question.
Yes. Do you know where we could find the actual number for the ending balance of the utility plant in service?
Actual number for North Dakota.
Ending balance as of December 31st, 2012.
For at the actual year?
Yes, yes, end of year.
Not that we used to develop this test year. The ending balance that would have been used to create our 2012 annual reports?
Yes.
In the North Dakota annual reports, I believe we report average balances, and I don't know if I don't have that information with me today.
Could that be submitted?
Certainly, we could provide that information, yes.
You'd propose that be a late-filed exhibit.
Okay, we are up to H, Exhibit H. And end of year, what do you want to call this?
End of year 2012 utility plant in service.
Utility plant in service.
Yes.
Is there any objection, Mr. Johnson?
No, Your Honor. Point of clarification, is this North Dakota jurisdictional?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. That will be a late filed Exhibit H, and that is admitted. All right. Continue, Mr. Norrell.
Thank you. We're just wondering, because it was noted in the opening statement that was what was the starting point for this test year, and we're just wondering if we could get those numbers.
Can I clarify that is the starting point on a forecast basis? When we filed our rate case in December, I believe it was, of 2012, we had a forecast of what we had expected the ending balance of 2012 to be. To be the beginning point of the beginning balance of our 2013 test year.
That was a forecast, though? Do you have the actual numbers?
Well, we have actual numbers through March of 2012, and then we build to our ending balance of 2012 based on all of the plant additions and retirements and transfers. That are forecast in the capital budgeting process that is managed by Lisa Perkett in our capital asset accounting area. So we build that balance based on all of our forecast additions during 2012 to get to our beginning balance for 2013.
When do you have the actual number for December 31st, 2012?
We provided that information, I believe, around May 1st of 2013.
Could you please look at page 24 of your rebuttal testimony, approximately line 19? It states that the company completed a sales forecast update in July of 2013. Has that information been provided to the parties here? in particular advocacy staff?
I do not know.
Do you know if that information can be located, and if it hasn't been, we don't show that it's been reported. That's why we're asking if that could be submitted as a late filed exhibit.
So exactly what would you want?
It looks like the company completed a sales forecast update in 2013. We would just like to see some sort of numbers as to what that updated forecast.
Total sales by customer class by month for the year 2013 or?
Yes.
Okay.
So you're requesting another late filed exhibit?
Yes, Your Honor.
And this would be Exhibit I. And could you repeat what you...
Total sales by customer class for North Dakota State by month for 2013.
Thank you. And Mr. Johnson, would there be any objection?
No objection, Your Honor.
All right. Exhibit I, late filed, will be admitted.
Thank you, Your Honor. May I approach the stand with another proposed, the witness with another proposed exhibit?
You may.
Thank you.
Your Honor, I have handed out another data request. This is a response from NSPM to North Dakota Public Service Commission data request number 5-065. We would move that this be admitted as Exhibit
15.
15, yes.
Mr. Johnson, you have a copy?
I do, Your Honor. We do not have any objection.
All right, thank you. The document is admitted as Exhibit 15.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ms. Hoyer, could you please read the question in this one as well?
Witness Ann E. Hoyer, Revenue Requirements, Exhibit AEH-1. Please refer to the interim rate increase approved by the NDPSC on January 30th, 2013 in the amount of $14,704,000. 8.05%, and provide a monthly incremental sales revenue collected from customers beginning on February 16, 2013, and continuing throughout the rate proceeding. Please also provide the breakdown of the incremental sales revenue by customer class and by fixed costs slash usage and any other approved charges.
Thank you. Our records show that we did receive the monthly billed, net unbilled, and calendar interim rate revenues in February 2013 and March 2013. But do you know if the company has responded, if it's given anything for the months of April, May, June, or July as of yet?
I don't know. I don't know.
Would the company be willing to update that? To provide that?
I believe so.
Your Honor, the staff would move that that would be admitted as another late filed exhibit, updated. Updated billed, net unbilled, and calendar interim rate revenues. As pursuant to the request in the data request.
Okay, say that again. Updated.
Billed, net I guess it'd be updated monthly billed, net unbilled, and calendar interim rate revenues for April, May,
Well, you don't need to describe the entire thing. I just need a description to put in the exhibit list so we can locate what it is.
Understandable.
So, updated monthly billed, net, unbilled.
And calendar interim rate revenues.
Okay, and calendar interim rate revenues. All right. Does that explain well enough for you, Mr. Johnson, what's needed?
Yes, Your Honor, it does. The only reservation I would have is I don't know whether July data would be available. Common sense would indicate it is, but sometimes common sense doesn't prevail. I do know that we have supplemented some of these responses already, and we will provide those as part of the late filed exhibits.
Okay.
I do not know the full extent of the supplementation as I sit here.
All right. Well, I'll label this one Exhibit J, and it will be admitted as late filed. All right. Mr. Norell, proceed.
Thank you. I'm gathering my bearings with the technology here. If you could go to page 33 of your rebuttal testimony, lines 17 and 18, you take issue with Mr. Mugrace's use of a three-year historical. Is that correct?
Can you restate that question?
You state that Mr. Mugrace provides no evidence that the company's proposed expense for 2013 is not reasonable. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Has the company provided any updated numbers to staff to rebut Mr. Mugrace's proposal of the three-year historical? With regards to transmission expense?
I don't think so, but I don't know all of the data requests that we have answered on transmission expenses, so.
I have no further questions, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Norell. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, do you have any questions?
Can you just simplify for me why exactly the three-year average, you consider the three-year average inappropriate?
Well, the purpose of filing a future test year or a projected test year as allowed by North Dakota statute is to provide for the costs that the company expects to incur during the period that rates are to be in effect. And in the 2013 test year, we do expect rates to be in effect for 2013, and costs that we expect to incur in 2013 would be appropriate to recover as a part of the test year. When you're looking at costs that are made up of a three-year historical average, in general, you have your three-year historical average using 2010, 2011, and 2012. You're not taking into consideration any of the cost changes that happened during your 2013 year. For instance, as explained by Mr. Foss and Ms. McCartan, we go through an extensive development process for our operating budgets. And for instance, when we calculate what we believe the appropriate labor levels are, we start out with actual labor costs as of February 2012 and project our existing employees, what we expect to be paying those employees during the year, the projected year. So our costs reflect what we truly believe they will be during that year.
Well, you have to be basing that on something. You're not pulling that out of the air. You have to base it on something, like just like I do at home. I guess what my electric bill is going to be based on what it was.
Absolutely. It's based on our actual wage levels that we experienced as of a certain period of time. And in the case of our 13 test year, it was they were based on February 2012. And then we looked at the wage increases that we gave in 12. And the ones that we are expecting to give in 13. So they're based on what we really truly expect to happen in 2013.
Okay, so was everything in your projected test year based on a February 2012 data, or is that just wages?
That was wages. I believe the budgets were developed in the spring of 2012, so they would have had the actual data that they had at that time. And then we used economic indicators for things like materials, chemicals, other, you know, costs that are included in our operating costs.
And I guess I'm still curious why using an average is not why you consider that a less accurate or a less good way of making that projection. You had said in the very beginning answer to my question that the three-year average didn't take into account what really happens in 2013. Well, your projected test year in December can't take into account what really happens in 2013 either, because you're projecting it in December or earlier when you're preparing mm-hmm. the rate case. Mm-hmm. So we all know that's part B, okay? But when we're sitting there preparing the rate case and having a projected test year, why picking February 2012, why is that better than a three-year average? Or whatever other month you picked for any other expense, why is the three-year average somehow wrong as far as a place to start?
Okay. I think you know, just looking at labor is illustrative of just cost in general. If you're using labor costs as part of your average that are incurred in 2010, you're not taking into consideration, you know, so that's sort of one-third of the weighting of what your average would be. You're not taking into consideration wage increases that occurred in 2011 and 2012 and those you expect to happen in 2013. So that necessarily understates what you think your true expenses are going to be in 2013.
Well, if you take a three-year average, you're going to have those actuals for those 3 years. Now, I understand mm-hmm. that you may be adding then something for an expectation. But the three-year, I'm still trying to get at why the three-year average is somehow in an inaccurate place to start, which you've said, like, a lot. And there's a lot of pages of testimony about mm-hmm. why to use it and a lot of pages about why not to use it. But I just need that simple fourth grade, as Brian has mentioned, mm-hmm. I keep asking for, fourth grade understanding.
You know, okay, I guess if it was just a place to start and then you made changes from there, that might be one thing. But what Mr. McGrath did is he looked at all of our expenses and he did a three-year average of them without any other consideration about changes in wages and cost increases for, you know, materials and other expenses that, you know, will occur, that have occurred since that three-year average period, since that three-year average occurred.
That three-year average, though, is 10, 11, and 12, correct?
Yeah.
And uh-huh. you didn't have any of those known numbers at the end of 12 when you were doing your projected test year.
Well,
either.
We would have known 2010, 2011, and part of 2012.
And most of 12.
Yeah.
But not 13. Nobody knew 13 at that point in time.
No, but we can certainly predict, just like we do our own income, when we're doing our own budgets for ourselves, I don't look at what happened for the last 3 years. I look at what I expect to be doing when I'm setting my budget.
We'll see. The trick is to just not set a budget. It's much easier. That reminds
me. I found that to be very effective.
That reminds me of a question from yesterday, and I think you're the person it was deflected to.
Yes.
Why is the forecast for North Dakota's peak for 2013 winter again?
Okay. Yes, that was directed to me, but I'm not the appropriate person to ask.
So who is? So there's nobody.
Mr. Pepin will be able to answer your question.
Okay. I think that's it, at least for now. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go to the commission next. Commissioner Fedorchik.
Can you do some summary for me? I'm hoping. What is the difference between what you guys are asking for in terms of revenue requirement and what Mr. Mugrache is asking for?
Very good.
Is that right?
I don't know.
Am I saying it wrong every time I say your name? Yes, but it's okay.
Oh, I just like to do the rolled R's.
I can do that too. Okay. As I had just had previously said, the purpose behind our proposed test year is to set rates for the period that that are based on costs we expect to incur during the period that rates will be in effect. Mm-hmm. So we are using a projected year, 2013. That is based on our projected current revenues, the other revenues that we receive and have forecast to receive for other revenues, as well as our operating expenses and depreciation expense and taxes, other items on the income statement. In addition to that, we've also developed our rate base based on what we expect to our plant investment and other rate base items for the year 2013, taking into consideration all of our plant additions that we forecast to happen during the end of 2012 and all through 2013. In this way, we believe that we've put forward a fair estimate of what our costs will be in 2013, and that is what we're asking to recover in this case.
Okay. And the revenue requirement that you guys are asking for is what? 14.
Well, that's our revenue deficiency. So our rate increase request is 14.9 million. Yes.
And what did Mr. Mugrache say?
What did he think it was?
Yeah.
I believe based on his revised supplemented position with a couple of corrections and changes, he's believes that we're actually had a $10 million deficiency.
Okay.
Or sufficiency, sorry. Sufficiency.
What are the biggest components contributing to the difference between what you guys think it is and what he believes is reasonable?
Okay, the biggest components, the biggest one is the change from the 12 CP allocator to the 1 CP allocator, and we've calculated the difference to be approximately $21.5 million.
Okay. What are the other big ones?
The difference in return on equity is about $4 million. There's many inconsistencies in the way they've developed rate base. just various other adjustments that are smaller. The three-year average is when you look at the net of the way they three-year averaged revenues and the way they three-year averaged expenses, about $1.3 million increase, actually. They've excluded incentive compensation and the nuclear retention programs. They've recommended exclusion of charitable contributions, nuclear fees, some payroll taxes related to incentive compensation. Those, you know, that's the summary. There's quite a few chain differences.
Okay. So he's going to be up here today or tomorrow at some point outlining all the reasons why his approach makes sense. Have you covered everything you want us to know in terms of what doesn't make sense about him? I mean, have you explained?
Well,
is there anything more you want to explain?
Because there's just so much.
Yeah. Believe me, I know.
I tried to put it all in my rebuttal testimony.
The big stuff. Focus on the big stuff.
Although Mr. Mugrache recommends a change from a 1CP, from a 12CP to a 1CP allocator, he also not only does that, he three-year averages the 1CP allocator. And then he does not apply that 1CP change to everything. He only applies it to certain things. For instance, in the beginning balance for rate base, but then in developing rate base, each one of the items in rate base, but then there's adjustments to rate base that we've proposed and to our base data, as well as some of the adjustments that we've agreed to. He doesn't apply the impact of that change to those adjustments too, so those adjustments are creating larger adjustments than they otherwise would have been because it's not consistently applied. Mm-hmm. That's one of the differences. Another thing is that there's that three-year average for the demand allocator based on historical information, but all of the other allocators in the case are based on the projected year, like sales. There's an energy allocator. That's based on the 13 test year sales. If you were going to consistently do that, you might use a three-year average historical sales allocator too. That would be consistent. Your demand allocator is based on your sales levels, so that would be inconsistent also. There's that.
Okay, that's good. I'll dig more as I hear from him and read more into your specific rebuttal testimony. How did you demonstrate the reliability, accuracy, and test your test year projections? What did you look back upon to check what you guys came up with? I know you used some of the things as baselines, but did you go back then and do any sort of tests to demonstrate that this is accurate?
Well, what we do is we base all of our test year on what the corporate budgets were. So we tie all of our data and information back to what the corporation is budgeting for NSP Minnesota. So we tie back in total, and then that total ties, North Dakota ties to the total. There's considerable governance over the projected costs and revenues for each one of the operating companies in Xcel Energy in total. So we rely on that overall governance from our senior management to that the cost projections for the coming year are accurately and appropriately reflect the costs we expect to incur during that year.
Okay. And then the last rate case, there was test year projections, correct?
That's true.
How accurate have those proven to be?
The last test year was 2011, and then we had a 2012 step. So that the rates would have last changed in 2012. And I believe our 2012 earned returns in North Dakota, I believe it was 8 point... our weather normalized return was 8.92% in 2012. In 2011, which was our base year, the weather normalized return was 9.05. So that takes into consideration all of your revenues and expenses, and we were not able to earn our allowed return in 2011. And that was also based on a projected year.
So you probably under...
We underestimated.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's all for me.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Kalk.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Ann, for your testimony. Before I go down a separate line of questioning, so you're talking revenue requirements, so salary is certainly revenue requirements, correct?
It's part of it, yes.
Okay. So I can't remember which witness it was yesterday, but I was trying to go down a road that I didn't make any success.
I'll try.
Okay. So let's start at the top. Mr. Falke, he's a CEO. Let me rephrase that. Does any of his salary come from ratepayer dollars in North Dakota?
Yes.
Okay.
A portion of it.
So how would I determine what that portion is?
His salary, he is an employee of Xcel Energy Services. His costs are assigned to a cost pool that in general is allocated based on a factor that represents the relative support that he gives to all of the affiliates of Xcel Energy, Inc.
So when he comes up here to visit me once in the last 5 years, throw that dig out there, that is doing business for the regulated company. That would be why he would get some money from the ratepayers.
Well, he provides overall guidance for the company in general.
Okay. So... what's the quality control? And I'm picking the top boss, but according to the reports filed with the U.S. Security and Exchange Commission, his pay went up 34% this year, and he makes $11 million. How do I figure out how much of that is paid by ratepayers? That's a lot of money, and he's the head of a major company, so I don't begrudge him that. Mm-hmm. But a 34% pay raise, and I don't know how much of that is ratepayer dollars, when I've got a lineman for Xcel Energy in Minot that maybe doesn't get any pay raise, how do I figure out, because I'm not against paying people money, mm-hmm. but how do you figure, I don't think the lineman in Grand Forks or Minot got a 34% pay increase. Mm-mm. So how would I begin to even reconcile that to make sure what I think is fair, and this is my chance to do it in a rate case?
Okay, yeah, it is. First of all, he gets base pay. He has other forms of compensation like long-term incentive and restricted stock units and those types of costs, as well as an annual incentive cost. And then his costs are assigned from Xcel Energy Services to the operating companies. Approximately, I think it's around 30% of the Xcel Energy Services costs are assigned to NSP Minnesota. And then those costs are assigned out to electric and gas utilities in general and the electric utility portion is then assigned to the North Dakota jurisdiction. Of those types of costs, approximately
I appreciate where you're going with this.
It gets narrowed down so it's smaller.
I'm trying to get to something that we could actually do something with.
Okay.
And so could we figure out the amount of payroll dollars that are assigned to people that work for the regulated portion? I'm trying to walk this through that I think that I want to make sure that we have employees getting paid the right amount, but I also want to make sure that the regulated company, if you will, the dollars that go into there are not unfairly flowing to management, let's say, than to the people that are in the working class. Can you give me some way to shape? Is there something you could provide that shows in employee classes that this class of employees gets 2% regulated income, this class of employee gets 80%, to maybe show that the people that spend most of their time doing the day-to-day work get the appropriate dollars from the regulated company? Or is that just too hard to unravel that?
Well, I can provide labor that's charged from service company by business area. I can, of that labor that's charged to the operating company, then I can also provide the portion that's actually included in North Dakota electric utility rates. Same thing for labor costs that are incurred actually in NSP Minnesota that are assigned to the North Dakota jurisdiction. We have not asked for recovery of anything like long-term incentives or restricted stock units, other types of compensation. Other than AIP and we did ask for a long-term incentive for the nuclear employees only.
Sure.
But we are just talking about base wages and then a limited amount of the annual incentive program.
Okay, and let's go like this, Ann. I'll just table that for now, and if when we're all said and done, I may ask the last witness this. I'll talk to staff over tonight, and I just want to make that point, and then we'll see if we can do something with it.
Okay.
To follow on, just one more. In your, I believe it's your direct testimony, page 58, if my iPad notes are correct, that no lobbying costs are included in what you're asking for.
That's true.
Okay. So how do you define a lobbying cost? And where I'm going to get right back to the boss again. March 5th of this year, Mr. Falke went out and testified in front of the House Committee on Energy and Commerce that basically his goal was to reduce CO2 by 20% to continue to expand wind growth for the company. I consider that lobbying. Would you consider that lobbying?
I think that would be considered lobbying.
Okay, so then
I do not know how he charged his time. He would if he charges to lobbying.
Excuse me for pointing. I shouldn't have pointed.
If that was lobbying, he would have charged a lobbying cost pool that is not a part of the costs that we would assign to North Dakota as regulated costs.
Okay.
So they are excluded.
So when Mr. Nisbet, which I consider a very good ally many times downstairs helping us, when he says something in support of a PSC commission, I would be lobbying, and he gets paid. So I'm just trying to clarify what this really means. I think it's a glitch somewhere because I would consider that lobbying.
All employees that engage in lobbying activities are required to report their time as lobbying, which is charged to a FERC account or to a cost pool that is not included in regulated reports.
Because I understand I probably can't have my cake and eat it too, where I only support lobbying that supports my position. I mean,
it's difficult to do that.
Understood. Yes. But I think it's something that perhaps we need to clean up the definition of what is considered lobbying and how we might track those costs going forward, or just I don't have a solution there, but I'm aware of the potential to have many different scenarios develop where I don't want ratepayer dollars necessarily going in to lobbying for one thing or any other. And that's what I think you're saying here.
Yeah.
But I believe that lobbying is taking place, even if it isn't support. If you've got, I don't know, is some of Mr. Nisbet's salary, I would assume all his salary is from the regulated side. So that means
I wouldn't say that.
Okay.
I would ask, we could provide additional information.
Okay.
He actually probably does charge.
Maybe
lobbying.
Could you, okay. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, let's get this list of the management and the salary allocation. I don't know that would hurt. We'd have it once and for all.
Is that an undue request, would our general
counsel
ask for?
Well, it is part of what is and isn't in rates, what is or isn't being asked for in rates. It's not irrelevant to this case.
Your Honor?
Yes.
I believe a portion, not all, but a portion of the information that you're asking for, Chairman Kalk, has been provided by way of a response to an information request, and we can certainly make that part of the record, and we can make it part of the record now so Ms. Hoyer can speak to it to the extent she's able. She was not the author of the answer, but it may help her in responding to your questions.
Okay.
We can also provide you supplemental information that shows how lobbying expenses are tracked and excluded from the revenue requirement. It is not done on a by-employee basis. It's done much more granularly than that.
If you could provide that, I think that would be perfect for this line of discussion, and I'd call it good.
Okay.
Is that something that has been provided before in one of the exhibits or in some of the testimony?
I doubt it's been provided in the exhibits, and it's been only referred to generally as Ms. Hoyer was describing. It is the response to PSC 1-021. We can have copies made and have it put into the record just contemporaneously here if that's the desire.
That would be great if you could.
That's the executive piece. That's not the other piece. And that does not class stratify the wages, but this speaks to the top executive.
I think that's the piece I was concerned with the most, and if you could provide the lobbying breakout, that would be excellent.
Thank you.
All right. Why don't we label that document that you have there as Exhibit K, and that is admitted. And and you can get copies of that. That's Exhibit K. And then you, Chairman, you wanted another document about the lobbying expenses.
That would be great.
And that will need to be late filed?
I'm quite sure it will be.
Okay. That will be Exhibit L. That's late filed, and I assume there's no objection to either of those, Mr. Norrell?
Correct, Your Honor. No objection.
Thank you. Exhibits K and L then will be admitted. All right. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Did you have further questions, Commissioner Call?
No, Your Honor. No more questions, just a comment, I guess, to kind of close my thought process for the company and the witnesses that, you know, I encourage the companies to lobby their positions, but also encourage the dialogue back with this commission that if leadership of the company is going to take positions in certain venues, at least tell us what your position is. When Mr. Nisbet and I talk through the utility shareholders, we don't always agree on everything, and that's fine. But at least we're aware of the dialogue, and I think that's my point here, is that it's very frustrating as the chair of a commission to find out that a major company is taking a position contrary to what you're doing in the state at the federal level and reading about it in the front page of the Washington Post. It'd be nice to know those things ahead of time, so then if we could then respond accordingly and have the discussion that would ensue. Thank you.
No response necessary. All right, we'll move on to Commissioner Chrisman.
Ms. Hoyer, were you here yesterday when we talked about the pension fund and the losses that were sustained around the 2008 time frame and the need to make that up and possibly spread that out over a period of time?
Yes, I was.
Okay, so on this pension fund, I'm still trying to get down. Are we talking about a defined benefit pension fund?
Yes.
And is that something that only certain employees qualify for, or do all NSP employees who are in positions where they receive benefits qualify for the defined benefit pension?
Well, this is not my area of expertise. However, I believe most employees are covered under a form of the defined benefit plan.
And my familiarity with the defined benefit plan is here, the state one. And there's an expected rate of return that's used. And that's how the benefit is defined. There's so much going in. They expect over a long period of time it's going to get this rate of return. And so we define the benefit as, you know, whatever the number is. What is that expected rate of return that you use?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Can you find out? And
we can find out and get that information to you, yes.
Okay, and then how well is the pension funded right now? I'm always familiar with them being listed as a percentage that it's 90% funded or 60% funded or seldom 100%, but...
I don't know the answer to that question.
But you can
find out. We can get
that
information to you,
okay.
Yes.
Thank you. I have no more questions.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson, any further questions for this witness?
Just a couple, Your Honor.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Ms. Hoyer, you had some dialogue with Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco regarding your concerns with using a three-year average, and I would like to do a little follow-up on that.
Okay.
Is there a regulatory principle of matching that applies to rate making?
Yes.
Can you describe that for me, please?
Principle of matching your revenues and expenses with the period under which you expect rates to be in effect.
And why is it important that the period for the revenues and the expenses be the same?
To give you a fair opportunity to earn your allowed rate of return.
In the context of your 2013 rate case, what was the period of revenues that was reflected in the revenue requirement?
2013.
And under the recommendation by the advocacy staff, what was the period of expenses?
An average of 2010, 2011, and 2012.
And was the period of time of 2010 through 2012 a period of rising costs?
Yes.
And did that have the effect of having the expenses categorically lag the revenues?
Yes.
And was that your concern?
Yes. That's part of it, yeah.
I have no other questions.
Thank you. Mr. Norrell, do you have any questions?
Yes, Your Honor, just a couple. Ms. Hoyer, when you were speaking with Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, you talked about the extensive process that goes into forecasting the test year.
Mm-hmm.
Talked about developing budgets based off of certain numbers in 2012, economic indicators. But at the end of the day, aren't these all hypothetical numbers for the 2013 test year?
They're all forecasted, yes.
What do you use to ground or to discipline the spending of the company then if you've just got these forecasted numbers?
During 2013?
Yes.
There's extensive review of your budget versus actual costs, And the rate case is based on the budget, and there's significant management oversight of those costs, and you're encouraged to manage within your budget. Clearly, yes.
One of the commissioners, I can't remember which one, I apologize, had briefly mentioned AIP, the incentive program. Do you know, are all employees of NSP subject or eligible for that, or just some of them?
I believe it's the exempt employees are eligible for that program.
Do you know if that factor was a consideration in Wisconsin denying the incentive pay?
I don't know why the Wisconsin Commission ruled as they did.
Do you know at all? It was mentioned yesterday. I apologize. Some of these questions are just carrying forward from yesterday. Mm-hmm. It was stated that the AIP decision in regards to the Wisconsin Commission was under review. Do you know anything about that at all? Could you testify to that?
I don't have firsthand knowledge.
That's fine. Thank you. No further questions.
Thank you. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, any follow-up?
Yes. You know, the statute that permits the utility to choose the future test year, that's 4905.04.1, and it's what I'm going to be reading is paragraph 2A. But it requires the company to file, if they're using a future test year, a comparison of forecast data to historical period data to demonstrate reliability and accuracy of the utility's forecast, including a comparison of the prior year's forecast, and that's S apostrophe. So it's not talking about one prior year. It's talking about more than one prior year. Or budgeted data to actual data for these periods. Did the company file that information? Can you point me to it in the app or in your original testimony or something? The comparison, in order to demonstrate reliability and accuracy, the comparison of prior years, S apostrophe, forecast or budgeted data to actual.
I believe that the witnesses provided within their individual testimony, comparison to historical information. We provided our 2011 actual cost of service study in my direct testimony. I believe we filed as exhibits or as response to data requests our annual reports from 2012, and various, I have an analysis of the cost drivers in this case compared to the last rate case, which, you know, talk about what's why we are asking for a rate increase. That information is included in my testimony, my direct testimony. You know, various different places within testimony that information is provided.
Is there a summary of the forecast and the actual and the budgeted? And I guess budgeted standing in for the word forecast at the time in the testimony? Because Commissioner Fedorchuk had asked you that same question. Your response to that's what made me go read the law, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Your response to the question talked about the fact that you didn't earn your allowed return.
We did not.
Which, I don't know if that's the answer to that question or not, because the question is, how well did your forecast, your budget, reflect actuals? Now, if everything was perfect, maybe that actual earned return would be the perfect answer to that question. But mm-hmm. 100, there could be 100 reasons why that didn't happen, unrelated to how well you forecast. Mm-hmm. So what I was wondering is, can you point me to, and you might need a minute or two at the next break to find the pages to point me to, but where you have made that comparison so that we can look at it and see how accurate it was. And was it only to the 1 year, 2011? I mean, I think that's why staff was asking for some of those.
2011 test year. We do have that information in my direct testimony.
Okay, so you compared one, but I'm thinking the statute requires more than one.
I provided our 2011 actual revenue requirement. It's not really compared to the forecast test year, but that information was provided in my direct.
Okay, but it does say that you shall present this comparison in order for the commission to determine how good your forecasts are. So we'll take a look at that, and maybe over the break you can figure out if it's already here or if you need more.
Okay, thank you.
That's all I have. Thanks.
All right, thank you. Commissioner Fedorchik?
I have no questions.
Thank you. Commissioner Kolk? Commissioner Christman, all right. Any further questions, Mr. Johnson?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Norrell?
Oh, Your Honor.
All right, thank you. This witness is excused. It's 3:15. We are going to take a 15-minute recess and then come back, and the company has two witnesses remaining, Michael Pepin and Stephen Huso, and it looks like they're both going to be fairly quick. And the 4:30 phone call, correct.
Your Honor, question for you, I don't know that this needs to be on record, but people should be here anyway, so I don't know how to do this.
But what?
The question is, if we have a short gap between our witnesses and Mr. Tyson's scheduled call, we could conceivably tell him we may call from any time, I'll just pick a number out of the air, 4:15 on, rather than get 3 sentences into staff and then have a break.
Certainly. I think the commission has made it clear they want to complete the company's case before we move on. So,
okay, thank you.
Good suggestion.